Dear friends, in this weekly study of Bhagavad Gita, we have been looking into this very important 13th chapter where we learn how to separate that which is the changing names and forms which are because of their change they are not real, to learn to separate them from the unchanging, everlasting, ever existing reality, that which never changes and that is only a succession of change without any substance to it. So the life depends a great deal on how we learn to distinguish them, to separate them from one another. And then when we learn to do that, the knowledge of truth dawns upon us. The truth that is unchanging, the truth that is therefore beyond all space and time, because time means change. Time is measured only as change. In time everything changes. We make this statement that in time everything changes, but if we see what is time, it means change. If there is no change, there is no time. So, this science of understanding what changes and what does not change is very important for our life, life in general. Sometimes we make distinctions as secular life and spiritual life. Really, there is no such division. All life is spiritual. There is the ignorance of spirit that makes the life what we call worldly or secular. As the ignorance is removed, we see that life means spiritual. It is spirit that may constitutes living or life. So, this is an important distinction to learn, that what changes and what does not change. And we saw that in the first these verses, 4th, 5th, 6th, especially 5th and 6th, Lord described what is changing, what is therefore the perceived and not the perceiver. That which is perceived, kshetra, the word used was kshetra, or the field of perception, and the perceiver. What is perceived has been very beautifully described in those two verses, the verse number 5th and 6th, that everything that is seen, felt at the gross level or the subtle level, including one's own ego, all that falls into perceived. You perceive it, you see it, like you see your thoughts, you see that even the sense of I, that also, that ego principle, that also is part of what is perceived. But what is then perceiver? Lord is not directly telling it. We expected that, well, okay, the knowledge of perceived has been given. Come on, Lord Krishna, tell us now what is the perceiver, who is the perceiver? And Lord is not telling that directly, at least. Instead, apparently the track changes. What happens there? Lord is now describing all the blessed qualities that transform the life. The life is to be lived according to certain principles, so that one can get to the level where the truth becomes apparent. What is being or going to be told, the knowledge of the perceiver, is not something that can be told as an object, because if you can tell that, then it becomes knowledge of the perceived, not knowledge of the perceiver. So, therefore, there is no way of describing the perceiver by any specific words or signs. But although you cannot specify it, you can become that. That is the idea. You become it. Therefore, one of the very beautiful, famous Upanishad describes that Brahma Ved Brahma Iva Bhavati. The knower of Brahman becomes Brahman. The knower of Brahman becomes Brahman is a very special statement, friends. The knower of, say, football doesn't become football. The knower of chemistry or math doesn't become chemistry or math. But what is the special feature that knower of Brahman becomes Brahman? The special idea lies here, that when we give up this idea that I am so and so, and thus know our true nature as all-pervading Brahman, all-pervading reality, then what happens? You got the that knowledge, and then now you don't have a limited identity. You have become that. It is like this. Suppose, for example, someone, say our Jose, is under the hallucination that I am somebody else. When that hallucination is gone, he gets the knowledge of who he is. So he got the knowledge that he is Jose, and so what happened to him? He became Jose. He was Jose. He became Jose by just removal of the ignorance that he was somebody else. That is what is the problem with us, that we think I am so and so, a limited entity, being born on such and such date, I am having such and such age, by gender I am man, woman or something. So, by profession, I am a teacher, or I am a student, or I am working in a shop. That is my profession. I tell my age so and so, so much. These are my friends. These are my relations. All that is how we specify ourselves. This is ignorance. When that ignorance is gone, you know that you are everything. You are divine. You are infinite. You are the knower. And thus, when you know the knower, now you have become that. And so, as Swami Vivekananda beautifully described, that religion is being and becoming. Now, this is being and becoming. You are that. Now you become that in the sense of only removal of ignorance, and that removal of ignorance requires life to be transformed in certain positive directions. It is not that this knowledge will flash in a life that is just going all the way into the physical enjoyments or very indisciplined life. It will never dawn there. Therefore, now here it is given, the coming five verses are the real cornerstone, you can say, of how Vedanta tells us to mold our life, change our life. It is the change of life that is really the practical religion. It is not just believing something, not just nodding to something, yes, 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 I am a non-dualist, or I am a dualist, or whatever, I believe in Krishna, or I believe in Shiva, or I believe in Jesus, or whatever. All those verbal acknowledgments, that is not religion. It is the transformation of life, and that is the true practical religion. The life becomes completely different. It becomes the life illumined. It is like this, that if they a little while ago these bulbs, these globes, these bulbs were all there, but and the switch was off. Now, what has happened if you say, hey, please switch it on? It is not, the idea is not just push that button up and down. The button up and down that is connected to that electric supply going to all these bulbs. So when you put it on, what happens? The illumination. So when the knowledge is flowing in our life, life is illumined, and there are signs of illumined living, just as there are signs of that illumined bulb. Not that you have to refer to a book whether the bulb, that bulb is lighted or not. By looking at that, you know. You don't have to refer to the manual that whether the bulb should be considered lit or not lit. It is the sign. So how a person who desires or who aspires to realize the one's true nature, or wants to know the perceiver, the kshetrajna, how that person molds the life? The principle is very interesting. All the signs that a person has because of ignorance, the ignorance manifests in various ways. So all those signs of manifestation of ignorance have to be gradually erased, so that the knowledge get scope to manifest. Knowledge doesn't need to be imported. It is already there. But because there are impurities due to ignorance, those impurities are blocking the flow of knowledge. So what needs to be done is to erase those. And so it is told now, what is knowledge? Knowledge practically means cultivation of these virtues. Knowledge means molding the life on the lines of these virtues. practical spiritual life, friends, is that it is not just sitting in the parlor and talking a lot about various philosophies. It is putting oneself into that discipline. And then if we are doing that, we become spiritual, we become religious. The religion starts coming in our life. So, here Lord says, let us see the seventh verse. Amanitvam adambhitvam ahimsa kshantirarjavam acharyopasanam shaucham sthairyam atmavinigraha. Humility, unostentatiousness, harmlessness, forbearance, uprightness, service to the Guru, purity, self-control, dispassion for sense objects, and absence of egoism. Some of them I told from the next verse as well, because here in translation, all these verses 7 to 11, they have been translated together. First thing is humility, amanitvam. This is a practice of humility. It is a very important practice, and it is not easy, because humility does not mean lack of self-respect. One must have self-confidence. Let us not confuse the two things. Lack of self-confidence and thinking that, I am nobody, that is not sign of humility. The humility is not to think of oneself as superior to anybody else. That is very important. We think of ourselves as greater, superior, bigger than somebody. A lot of complex therefore gets generated in our life. We think of ourselves always. In some books of practical psychology I have read this, that a person thinks of oneself as better than someone and not as good as someone. So therefore tries to, you know, the change the behavior, not acting naturally, but always under pressure, that I am less than this person and more than this person. So this I am more than somebody or I am less than somebody, that idea is to be removed. That is humility. Be humble. That don't never let us think that I am superior to someone. This is something that happens to us always, that I am superior to this person, and so I try to show that, I try to snub somebody, that no, what do you know, I know. So it is that tendency is therefore to be suppressed with effort, with this knowledge that no, I have no right to say that I am superior to anyone. So this practice is very important. In our worldly matter, these things, you know, in world we have different positions, and in some respect some position is considered superior to some other position. And so our behavior in relation to those positions in certain context has to remain, but without any such understanding that thereby I am superior to that other person. It is true that in our day-to-day life, we are at different positions. We have different duties, and so we have to discharge those duties, and there one may be superior to somebody else. But that should not mean at all that as a person I am superior to somebody else. The two things are very different. And so this humility is an acknowledgement of the divinity in every being. So when one is aware of the divinity in everything, how can one feel that sense, I am bigger than, oh, you are God. It is important, therefore, that one should not even denigrate anyone, slight anyone. As spiritual aspirant, this practice has to be cultivated. In one of the Sanskrit scriptures, very important, called Manusmriti, it is therefore told that even if you meet a person of otherwise very low caste, I am not right now getting into caste system and all that, but suppose that person is of a low caste, you should be humble to that person and learn from that person too. A wise person should learn the spiritual science even from the most low caste person with humility. Antyajadapi paravidya. A very beautiful phrase, you know, that even the lowest in the social rung, from such person also one should be ready to learn the highest knowledge. And baladapi subhashitam, even from a child, one should be ready to learn even from a little child that good things that they would be saying. Baladapi subhashitam, that a child many times utters significant things. So one should learn that also. And how that learning becomes possible? By humility. So humility opens our heart to the education. Without humility, our heart does not become open to education. Because already I have the ego, I know everything. Now no room available for knowledge to enter there. So that is why it is very important that you have one practices this humility, and not as a social virtue, but as a spiritual virtue. Social virtue is kind of manners, customs, that is good. But when it is to be practiced as spiritual virtue, the basis of this humility becomes important. Basis of spiritual humility is acknowledgement of the presence of divine in every being. And so, how can I be superior to anyone? Then, adambhitvam, that is no need to show off. We all have to have that tendency. Otherwise, there was no need to tell these things. If we already have these things, why should Lord waste words in telling these? What needs to be told is being told. And the need is there because our normal tendency is opposite to that, to show ourselves to be better than what we are, or what different from what we are. That tendency to show off, that is to be avoided. that is universal. We can see that how we portray ourselves as the embodiment of virtue, how we try to prove always that I am right, you are wrong, I am good, you are bad, and so forth. It is this idea, therefore, of not to show, not to make unpretentious, unostentatiousness, or no pretenses. It is a very important virtue to be practiced. And in spiritual life, this has a great importance because many times a spiritual aspirant takes a rather easy, although stupid, but we all want to take an easy path. So, this question gets asked many times that, well, tell us an easy path to God realization, something that is very easy. Now, these things require all these efforts to be taken. But if we want to skirt those efforts, what we do? And that happens. That tendency is there. Instead of becoming spiritual, instead of changing our perception and behavior, we show off as spiritual personages. That look, I am Swami, so I am spiritual. Remember that. I will try to do that. Instead of changing my life, instead of trying hard to acquire all these virtues, to make it progress on the right track, what I will do? I will take up some external signs, and thus I will bank on those signs and present people, hey, look how spiritual I am. That, and hey, you people, you don't know anything. I am spiritual. This showiness is a big obstacle in spiritual life. It unconsciously changes the direction of efforts. Then you try more always to show that, look how my face shines, because then I will rub it nicely, apply certain things to bring out what? The so-called spiritual luster. That doesn't mean anything. It is going in the wrong direction. So, this is therefore a great important virtue that a spiritual aspirant needs to cultivate. Then, ahimsa, the non-killing or non-injuring. What is this non-injuring? If it means not killing anyone, then this virtue is impracticable. You cannot breathe then, and then if you don't breathe, you are killing yourself. So still you are killing. So it is, and if you breathe, well, so many microbes in the air and all that, they get killed anyway. So are you killing or not killing? It all depends really of not having enmity towards anyone. Do not go to kill anyone. Otherwise, it becomes this violence. Non-violence should be practiced in thought, words and deed. That one should not have the feeling of enmity towards anyone. Not an easy thing, friends. It is the idea of enmity. Every now and then it surfaces. Somebody does you see something not very pleasant, immediately the idea that fellow is bad, should be eliminated, comes up. Therefore, this is really killing or the injuring others. The important practice, therefore, is not to have the hateful feelings in about anyone in the world. Maybe that person be worst of the felons. Yet, why should one not have a hateful feeling to that person? Because God is in that person too. So, you may be a police officer, you may be a judge, and maybe you have to give a death sentence to somebody, and that should be given. Will that be killing? Will that be violence? It is still non-violence if that person does not have any personal enmity to that person. That is very important, that not out of hatred or anger or enmity, but as a matter of duty, that person is killing, fine. It is not a violence then. It is an important fulfillment of one's duty. It is killing is therefore not to be understood in this form, that so I will not kill any single being. Well, then you will kill yourself. That is again killing. So that is not the idea. Lord is not suggesting anything impractical. In fact, you can see that he is insisting that Arjuna should fight this battle. Let us see this apparent contrast or contradiction. Many very bright, very intelligent scholars also do not understand this dilemma in Bhagavad Gita. I read a report of some press conference given by a very highly acclaimed scholar, and he could not understand Mahatma Gandhi's endorsement of Bhagavad Gita. According to him, Bhagavad Gita seems to be teaching violence, and Mahatma Gandhi's adherence to non-violence is therefore does not match his endorsement of Bhagavad Gita. Bhagavad Gita teaches violence. How can Mahatma Gandhi be follower of Bhagavad Gita and at the same time teacher of non-violence? This person neither understands the meaning of Bhagavad Gita and violence and non-violence. It certainly is impossible to practice non-violence in the sense of not killing anyone. It is the meaning here is not hatred. It is not that non-violence means then so there should be no police, no army. Everybody should be allowed to do whatever they are doing, then you actually will be perpetrating violence. So, it is a very important thing to understand the distinction between these two, that one should be quite firm. It was, I mentioned in this class or some other class, I don't remember, but one of the devotees of Sri Ramakrishna, Balram Basu, once got a doubt. He was follower of the Vaishnava sect. Vaishnava sect believed in non-injury, non-violence, and so He got a doubt whether should I kill bedbugs or not. His bed was full of bedbugs. So should I kill them or not, because then I will be committing violence if I kill them. So he decided to go to Sri Ramakrishna to get this doubt resolved. And he didn't have to really ask. When he went there, he saw Sri Ramakrishna was killing the bedbugs. So that was the only time anybody ever saw Sri Ramakrishna killing bedbugs. So it was apparently for educating this person, that's all. So it is not that you, there, that does it mean so you don't take antibiotics or antibacterials, that it will kill millions of germs. It will be antibiotic, can be then considered a weapon of mass destruction. That is it violence to take antibiotics? What do you think? Vishwanath?
Yes,
taking antibiotics is it violence?
No.
No, sure?
Yeah.
Okay. So, it is important therefore to understand this idea, ahimsa, non-violence in the spiritual sense. That let us not have enmity towards anyone, hatred towards anyone, jealousy towards anyone. And if we go to practice this, we will see it is not very easy. We have to practice these things with great diligence, and thus we will see the results also automatically. That as we practice this non-violence in the sense of not getting angry to anyone and not having hatred towards anyone or jealousy towards anyone, our inner self starts manifesting more and more. And we will, as we progress in practicing these virtues, we will get the answer to that extent automatically. We are being given answer as to who is the perceiver. That answer will start dawning in as the practice of virtue advances. We will start feeling more joy, more contentment. There will be at all that restlessness as we practice this principle of non-violence. I don't have jealousy towards anyone. Let us not have anger or hatred towards anyone. And see, the signs of Lord will start manifesting in our life to that extent. Then, Shanti, Arjavam, these are beautiful Sanskrit words. That is forbearance. It is forbear. People may do mistakes, commit certain offenses, may give you trouble. Now what do you do? There will be then this sense of, okay, forget it. It is, after all, I got what I needed, what was written in my karma, I got it. No point in venting anger or cursing somebody for that. And this makes the life very peaceful. Peace is a sign of God. One of the important these signs of a spiritual person is peace reigns around that person. Doesn't matter whether that person is seated in a temple, in a cave, or is seated or standing in Times Square on a summer evening. So even in the Times Square on a summer evening, this fellow will be able to get the peace of a Himalayan cave. Why? Because this is the person forbears everything. That doesn't matter, things come in this manner, there is cold, yes, okay, there is cold, what can I do, what better I can do about it. Let us not make our mind go haywire because of that. Someday there will be cold, someday there will be hot. If I can alleviate that, that's fine. But if not, okay, let me manage, let me do what best I can do with it, happily, peacefully, keeping one's priorities intact. It is, and I have seen these things in so many wonderful spiritual souls, and I am not talking only about monks, also about many householder devotees who, because of these practices, they have learned to forbear. They, if somebody harms them, they do not take an offense. Okay, what that person, he was only a messenger, a mailman. This was going to come to me anyway. This was my karma, so somebody delivered it to me. That person was just a mailman. Suppose a mailman brings you a bill. Hey, you have to pay $50,000 for something. And do you then curse that mailman? Hey, why? It is, well, that mailman brings whatever you deserve or whatever you have to do. It is between you and the other person. The mailman has nothing to do. So if somebody seems to harm us, that person really is just a mailman. That person does not is not really responsible for it. It is very difficult to practice this idea. Therefore, has been told here, a spiritual aspirant should practice this. That, I know how the road rage, you know, because in the somebody does not let you go fast enough, and then the blood starts boiling, or somebody does something to you, you become upset. It is. I saw an example, very good example, that one car that was the person was just trying to take out from the parking lot. And then the car had not even moved, but some other car came and hit this car, and this the car, both cars got damaged. Now this person came out. What happened? This person who had hit came out and said, "I am sorry, I don't know what I was doing. I was in a somewhat different state. I am very sorry." And this person told, don't worry, by the grace of God, you are not hurt, I am also not hurt, only cars are hurt. That will be taken care of by insurance. We will think about it later. Don't get agitated. Don't get angry. And I was, when I heard of this incident, I said, yeah, look, this is a good example. Example of forbearance. Don't get agitated. Don't get angry. Don't grind your teeth against somebody. So by that, by practicing this virtue, we start seeing the self in other. You know the wonderful prayer that Lord Jesus taught. One line comes there, that we shall forgive the trespasses of others as our trespasses get forgiven. It is when we commit something, we expect forgiveness. But then, are we ready to grant that forgiveness to others too, when somebody commits offense to me? In fact, my offense committed against me becomes so big in my mental horizon that I am not ready to forgive. Even if somebody hits me a little bit, in quarrel slaps me, I think death punishment should be reserved for such people. It is, because it is me, this has the audacity to hit me. So, when something wrong is committed to us, then we blow it out of proportion. So, let us practice this, and when we practice that, we shall start feeling the same self here, there, everywhere. That more and more that will start manifesting. One of my friends, he asks questions, always raises finger when we have a group discussing something, and then asks a question about why this and how this. Good thing, we get a nice reflection on many good ideas. But when these virtues get practiced, what happens? The questions really get answered. They really, the answers start coming in our life. We don't have to ask then too many questions. Then, soft speaking, arjavam, it is translated here as uprightness. Uprightness means it is this word arjava has many meanings. One is complete lack of crookedness. Upright, or you can say forthright, clear, no attempt to bend the things to deceive others. So that is called arjava. Be simple, be clear cut, do not create ambiguities. Such very nice people you will see as, for example, Sri Ramakrishna. If you see a straightforwardness, in fact, Sri Ramakrishna lays so much stress on being straightforward and simple-hearted that he says, if somebody is simple-hearted, then the God will give that blessings to that person in the form of realization. And God can be realized by the straightforward, simple-hearted people. So, practicing the simple-heartedness. Then, devotion to the teacher. This is again a wonderful sign of a person who wants to cultivate these virtues. That if you have respect for that knowledge, what happens? That respect is translated to the one from whom you get this knowledge. This knowledge comes to us from the teachers. The idea of Guru in Vedanta is that your getting knowledge is in fact manifesting the teacher more and more in your life. The teacher shines forth and you think that you know. It is the teacher is the lamp that starts shining more and more in your life. So, respect for knowledge is translated in practice as respect for teacher, and that gets translated as service. to teacher. Upasana, acharya upasana, very beautiful word here. This word upasana is not easy to translate in English. And here the translation is service to the guru. It is service is one aspect of it. Serve your teacher. Very good. But upasanam means has one more meaning, worship of guru. This is worshipping the teacher as the source of all knowledge, God himself. That is this. And you will see that so many great sages, they have such tremendous respect for their teacher, equivalent to the respect for God. Just as they had that feeling of worship towards God, same worshipful feeling towards teacher. Here I remember that verse in Shvetashvatara Upanishad, which comes almost at the end of the Upanishad, after having described all the wonderful philosophies and the different spiritual practices very beautifully, in a very profound manner. Now at the end, this Upanishad tells that to whom all these verses will reveal the meaning. The verses of the Upanishads are told, but to whom will they reveal the meaning? And verse says that yasya deve para bhakti yatha deve tatha gurau tasyaite kathita yartha prakashyante mahatmanah. These verses will make sense only to those who have great devotion, supreme devotion to Lord, and the same devotion, yatha deve tatha gurau, exactly the same devotion to the teacher. To such souls, these verses will open their meaning. What a great idea, tremendously poetic and supremely sublime, that these verses, they are not just words. These verses, they contain the supreme knowledge of the divine packed in those words. Those words are like caves. Caves of Ali Baba. Did you know caves of Ali Baba? Ali Baba's cave? Never heard? Ali Baba's cave. So unless you have that sesame open, that cave has lot of treasure. But if you don't know that word, then it is all blocked from you. And what is this sesame open for these? The devotion to Lord and the same supreme devotion to teacher. That then these verses become meaningful. So we shall continue the discussion of these practical ideas of spiritual life, how to build spiritual life in the next Friday's class. Any questions? Yes, Ram?
My question is, people can follow these virtues without being spiritual. So, do those people have the possibility of understanding God in the same way?
Yes. Yes. If somebody is following these virtues, cultivating these virtues, then whether those people are formally spiritual or not doesn't matter. They are spiritual. They are spiritual. it is they are, those people may not be called spiritual, but as it is said that the rose is as fragrant with any other name, and the essential characteristics of spiritual life are with them, so they are spiritual. Yes, please.
We're talking about the weather. Would you consider our emotions, like the nine senses emotions, like the weather? You know how one day we might have multiple, we have multiple different emotions, and the weather, each day the weather is different, and still we come back, we have the earth balancing us, the spirit here. So I'm not sure if I'm asking it right, but would you compare your emotions and the weather, how everything changes but it's still balanced?
Well, yes, it is. The weather keeps on changing, and yet there is a semblance of balance. So also our emotions keep on changing. Where is the balance? Where is the balance that one has to know? The balance is God. God or our true self is the balance of all these changing emotions. So let us conclude with the closing prayers. There will be the worship of Sri Ramakrishna on 26th of this month, the next Sunday, and you can see the program outside. It is from 11 o'clock onwards till about 7 o'clock, and that will take place in this new chapel, which is almost, as you can see, ready there. So a few minor things, we hope to get them all done in coming week. So that time we will be having this worship in this new chapel. So please come for the worship. And also there is a spiritual retreat coming up on March 24th, Sunday, Saturday, March 24th. So if you want to come for that, it is a day-long spiritual retreat. So if you would like to come for that, please register.